for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 607 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week it's the return of Dalton Shannon from Frankenstein the Unconquered. Dalton has a Kickstarter underway with Wells Thompson for this popular horror series. The Kickstarter will conclude on Thursday, October 5 at 12 noon Eastern Daylight Time. It's described this way. Frankenstein's monster thaws from the ice 500 years in the future to find a bombed-out apocalypse as hideous and broken as he is. We discuss who the various characters are, how this series came to be, and what we can expect from this creative duo in the future. Please be sure to support this great comic as soon as you finish listening to our fun conversation. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what Dalton has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's always a pleasure to talk with Dalton Shannon, the co-author of Descent into Dread, Mechaton, and Frankenstein the Unconquered, among other good things. And you studied creative writing and digital filmmaking at the University of Central Arkansas, and now reside in Little Rock, Arkansas. It says on here, where you slave away working for the corporate man and drawing his little cartoons.
And that's, yeah, wow, so, what an intro, yeah.
Yeah, so, well, that's what it says on Kickstarter, believe it or not. That's your introduction. So anyway, what we're talking about today, though, is Frankenstein the Unconquered, number 1-4, an action horror comic. So how you doing, Dalton?
Oh, doing great. Doing that whole slaving away for the corporate man. I actually work at a university now, so it's not as bad as it used to be. But no, it's been going really great. Just launched the new Frankenstein campaign. It's doing fantastic, and it's just been a really good September so far. How about you?
Pretty good. I told you off camera, I had some fighting I had to do with a certain interview that I did, but other than that, it's been fine. So we're into what we call the Burr months. September, October, November, December, because it's cold.
Get chilly, yeah.
In those months. Of course, I live in Florida, so it's not quite the same for me. But the one thing people always get mad at me because I don't say soon enough is that Frankenstein the Unconquered will be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, October 5 at 12 noon Eastern Daylight Time. Now, we're recording this a little early, of course, and the goal is $10,000, and you're well on your way to getting that as we're talking, so that's congratulations are in order.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's one of the fastest, if not the fastest, campaigns we've had up to date. As of this recording, we're just $16 away from 5K, so we're just about halfway there, and we have plenty of time to hit that 10K goal and get two brand new issues of Frankenstein right into your eyeballs.
Yeah, that's something I was interested as I was reading about, because issues number 1 and 2, I think you did separate campaigns for, but this one you're doing two issues. And why is that?
Well, for a few reasons. First and foremost, it cuts down on shipping, so you're not having to pay so much for every individual book to get to your doorstep. And secondly, we're impatient. Like, we don't want to spend 10 years doing, just these 13 or so issues of Frankenstein the Unconquered. Like, we want to do more Frankenstein, or we want to do other projects, or, we just want to tell a story. And Kickstarter has this inherently slow burn kind of business model built in to where it can be a year or more between issues. And we just kind of want to tell Frank and get it into hands as soon as we can. So we started doubling up on issues. We did it on the last Mechaton campaign as well. We did issues 4 and 5 there, and it seemed to go over pretty well. You know, it's that in-between space, so you're not doing single issues all the time, but you're not having to ask for a tremendous amount of money to do an entire collected graphic novel either. So it just kind of felt like the right kind of middle ground to where we can get these stories made, get them in your hands in a timely manner, and just get you more Frankenstein.
Uh-huh. Now, the co-creator is Wells Thompson, mm-hmm. comic writer and critic, co-author of all these good things, and he couldn't be with us today, so we're talking with you.
He couldn't be with us today. Rest in peace.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. let me read. There's a paragraph on the website, and if you go to, by the way, it's at Kickstarter. You go to, it says, Kickstarter Frankenstein the Unconquered, numbers 1 through 4, an action horror comic. I think I mentioned that already. But there is a paragraph, I think, that's really descriptive that I think people would like to know about. It says, Frankenstein the Unconquered is a 20-page full-color comic about violence as a mode of survival, the destructive inertia of revenge, and how toxic masculinity damages individuals and the environment around them. It's a love letter to pulpy adventure comics and films like Conan the Barbarian and Mad Max, as well as universal horror monsters and the literature that inspired them. Which I think that's a good thing. How long have you been a fan of, like, Frankenstein? Ever since you were young?
Oh, yeah, since I was a kid. There was, I've always loved monsters. Godzilla was probably, I don't remember a world without Godzilla in it. So monsters were always pretty cool. And then, there was one time I was a kid, I don't know, it was probably the late '90s. And, there was maybe TNT, some channel was doing a whole marathon of the old Universal monsters. And, my dad actually had the wherewithal to get a VHS tape and just record them all. So as a kid, I just watched, you know, Boris Karloff's Frankenstein, Lon Chaney's Wolfman, Claude Rains's Invisible Man, like, and of course, Bela Lugosi's Dracula. I was just enamored by, like, the expressionism in the cinematography. Like I didn't know it as a kid, but, like, they just looked weird and different. And the monsters were really cool. They were all black and white, so that was kind of alien to me. So I fell in love with all of those monsters. And Frankenstein in particular, I mean, I fell in love with, like, the Gillman and the Wolfman when I was a kid, because they were, like, the more, like, I don't know, action-y kind of aggressive monsters. But as I got older, I really fell in love with Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster, specifically Karloff's portrayal. Karloff is such a talent in that film. I'm blanking. Forgive me, aficionados. I'm blanking on the guy who plays Victor in that movie. They both carry that movie tremendously. But Karloff's monster is, I mean, he's the monster, the title character almost. I don't know, Frankenstein is just kind of, I've grown to appreciate the monster more as I've gotten older, appreciated how versatile the monster is. You can really put him in anything and it still works. Like, Alvin and the Chipmunks Meet Frankenstein is a banger of a movie, just as much as Karloff's original. Like, the monster just seems to work. He's like the Batman of the monsters. Like, you can just do anything with him. So yeah, and that kind of led to me wanting to do, like, Conan the Barbarian, but with Frankenstein's monster. And now we're here with him killing other monsters with a giant sword. It's a lot of fun.
See, it's amazing because this story is set, it says here, 500 years in the future, the Arctic thaws and the Beast, as referred to him, awakens to a bombed-out post-apocalypse. As hideous and hostile as he is, seeing an opportunity to reinvent himself and live the peaceful life he always wanted, the Beast attempts to settle down and live simply with villagers who are unafraid of his ghastly appearance. But when soldiers come to collect their due, violence is the only answer the Beast can come up with, and his dream of living simply is ripped away. and he gets exiled to the stars, which is something I find interesting. Well, how did you guys decide to send him off to the stars?
That was, I'll be honest with you, that was a throwaway line that I wrote. It was, so Frankenstein actually started off as a series of 8-page ash cans that we produced in-house. Like, we would co-write the scripts, and then I would draw them, and then we just print them off at the local copy shop and staple them together and sell them at cons. And when I was writing that first script, I was like, how do I open up with a bang? And literally Frankenstein riding a star down to Earth was the most interesting thing I could think of. And that just set the tone for the rest of the book. It's like, oh, he got exiled to space. How is he still alive? Oh, I guess he's just an unstoppable force of nature. Nothing can kill him. And like that just kind of set the precedent for how everyone else interacts with him throughout the rest of the book. I wanted to send him to space because having him come back from space was interesting. We have tons of like ideas for like a cosmic Frankenstein, maybe telling the story of what's going on up in space all of those years ago. But it really was just the most interesting way to open the story. And then we kind of fleshed it out from there.
Because the way it's described on here, chapter one shows the Frankenstein monster's return to Earth after his exile in the stars and explains how he ended up in this post-apocalyptic future. Chapter two sees Frank meeting the Wolfman, who becomes something of an unwilling companion on his journey to revenge. We also see more of Frank's past, including his lost bride, which I've always found really interesting. So it looks like each chapter has a different monster of sorts introduced in it. So the Wolfman comes into the second, and also the Frankenstein's bride. I don't want to give away too much, but does each chapter kind of build on the one before?
It does. Yeah. Frankenstein is kind of structured like a Western, more or less, where each issue is its own standalone thing. Frank rides into a town, confronts a problem, and then either fixes it or fixes it by making it worse, and then rides off into the sunset, more or less. And we want each issue to feature like unique challenges, unique foes, and yeah, monsters. So, eagle-eyed readers who are also Universal fans are probably going to be able to tell which monster is going to show up based on the title of the issue. They're very much based off of like the Universal catalog. Issue two is called The Beast and the Wolf, which is our play on Frankenstein meets the Wolfman. The first issue is just called The Beast because it's Frankenstein. Chapter three, The Tomb of the Beast, they're all plays on those old Universal titles. So you can kind of guess the monster from the title, but we're playing with, it's not a spoiler because they're right there on the covers, but like issue three is Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Issue four is The Invisible Man, and we also bring in The Blob, which is not a Universal monster, but still a classic cinema monster. And all throughout, we get flashbacks where we get to interact with the bride more and kind of see what led Frank to even getting shot into the stars in the first place. So it's definitely a monster mash of a story. We get to play around with those old tropes, those old characters, see how they interact in this little Mad Max Conan the Barbarian world. And it's brutal. It's super metal. And I don't know. It surprises me when I write it. So I hope it surprises readers when they read it.
Well, this is Ian Mondrick, the writer of Tomb of the Black Horse. He's quoted as saying, "Frankenstein the Unconquered is as savage and unrelenting as its titular monster, a stomping behemoth of a book that will blow your mind and soak your short box in blood." Wow.
That's beautiful poetry, yeah.
Now, I'm just sort of curious because cool. you Okay, go ahead, say that again.
No, yeah, I'll take that as a pull quote. That's great.
Okay. I'm kind of curious, because you did such an interesting change on Frankenstein, have you done the same thing with the other monsters? Like, for example, what's your take on Wolfman in Chapter 2?
Yeah, well, it's not spoilers, because Issue 2 is out to the public. If you haven't read it, I guess cover it. It's not that bad. Our take on the Wolfman is that he's the last good person in this world. Like, Larry is the son of royalty, basically, and it's a royalty that are like werewolves as like a race, and he's just a good person who wants to help people and wants to be kind in this world that definitely does not reward those traits. And in Issue 2, he runs across Frank, who is the polar opposite of Larry in every way, shape, and form. Frankenstein thinks he's, you know, noble, and Frank thinks that he's doing the right thing, at least according to him. And Larry is actually doing those things. Larry is actually trying to make the world better. He's actually trying to be friendly and make sure people are taken care of. And then the world just tears Larry apart, like figuratively and literally. Larry gets put through the ringer in this book. And we get to really kind of explore like what a man who is always hopeful and is an eternal optimist has to do to survive in a world that where those things are no longer true, or at least they're not readily available or apparent. And then to get to see him interact with Frank issue to issue, because he becomes a traveling companion of Frank's.
How does that happen? Around? I mean, how can that be? I mean, how can you get somebody
against Larry's will?
Yes. I guess we had to read to find out how that happens.
You'll need to read Issue 2, but Larry's definitely not traveling with Frank because he wants to. But it's an incredibly interesting dynamic, and we get to explore that even further in Issue 3 and 4. These are really the issues where their relationship becomes cemented, and it goes from this gross manipulation on Frank's part to almost a buddy cop kind of workplace camaraderie that carries through the rest of the series. So these issues are really pivotal in their relationship and in Larry's growth in general. So he's a great character to write, and our Wolfman is I feel for him every time I write a new issue. Because that he deserves the world, and we keep tearing him apart.
Okay, because I always get a kick, because whenever I read Superman, Superman is the most moral guy around. It's not the powers that make him Superman. It's the fact that he's so moral. And a lot of people always said Superman is the most boring character to write, because you know he's always going to take the high ground.
And yeah, so you it's can interesting. Tell those guys have never written Superman.
Yeah, I always get kicked because when somebody like this comes along, inevitably the bad guy or the less moral guy rubs off some on the moral guy, and he has to make some questionable choices in order to survive. See, Batman, I never know what he's going to do, because he's going to take less moral things every time. So it sounds like that Wolfman is more of a Superman character, and Frank is more of a Batman.
Well, sure. They definitely kind of fit into those general umbrella archetypes. Frank definitely sees no hope. He is a force of nature. He is just there to enact his will on the world, however he needs to get that done. And he doesn't care who he has to hurt to do it. And Larry's very much there's still people worth saving in this world. And sometimes that might even mean you, Frank, But we kind of have to get there to figure out what that even means at this point.
Okay, I got to ask, because one of my very favorite monster characters is the Bride of Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. I watched the movie, and there she is, and Frank reaches out and touches her hand, and she looks straight in his eyes and goes, ah!
And hisses. And
that killed me. I love that. I thought that was wonderful. So what's your take on the Bride of Frankenstein then? What is she like?
So the bride has, our bride is not necessarily, the cinematic bride that everyone's seen, the Elsa Lancaster, role. We're definitely pulling from the visual element of that, but this bride is very much the bride of the novel, which if anybody has read the novel, they know that the bride didn't even live in the novel. Victor destroyed her before he brought her to life because he was afraid of what would happen if he let these monsters go off and, like, you know, have babies and populate the world with monsters. So this is that bride. Somehow she survived that. And she is, we find her at first in issue 2 in a flashback. She is with Frank and they are together in their conquest of the world. Basically, they are husband and wife in conquest, and they are hardened. They're aggressive, and they have fun with it. At least the bride seems to have fun with it. She's much more diplomatic than Frank is. Frank will tear down cities to get what he wants, and the bride is like, well, maybe we can use this city to get something else. Like, we don't necessarily have to destroy everything. And so she's very much the diplomat in situation, especially in issue 2, 3, and 4, where we kind of, she uses that diplomacy to garner themselves into a position of power in the old world before Frank was
so she doesn't hiss at them.
Yeah.
Okay, so she doesn't hiss at people then.
I have not had her hiss yet, but you know, she just might. Anything can happen in this world. So yeah, the bride is very much Frank's soulmate, but they're very different characters that play off each other in very constructive ways. They're actually probably the best parts of each other. There's no toxicity in their relationship. They're both honest and pure with each other. They just happen to be doing horrible things all of the time.
Interesting. Now, 1 and 2 are done, right?
Correct. Yes. Those are in people's hands. They can read issue 1 and 2 whenever they like.
But you can also order 1 and 2 if you don't happen to have them during this campaign, right?
That is right. Yeah. This campaign is specifically funding issues 3 and 4. But you can also grab issue 1 and 2 if you miss them. You can grab all of the variant covers that we have as well. If you've missed any of our other projects like Mechaton or Descent into Dread, like, those are available to grab on this campaign. We have physical and digital copies as well of the main covers. We have like an everything tier where you can get stickers and tabletop RPG scenarios, prints, trading cards, pins. Like, we get just about everything on this campaign.
There's one level I want to get to before long, mm-hmm. but I want to go back to chapter 3 because on the Kickstarter page, there's a description that intrigues me. It says chapter 3 starts with an ambush. Mr. Hyde knocks Frank unconscious and drags him back to Lord Byron's castle for hideous experimentation, forever changing Frank and Larry. Now, if you look on, there's a subsection with pages where you get to see some of it. And there's this amazing little, if you listen to the video of it, there's a little business about hunter and prey that I found really fascinating and stuff like that. So what else can you tell us about chapter 3 before we get to chapter 4?
Chapter 3 is it's not quite as explosive as the first two issues. It's very much Frank as a captive, which is a position that he is not used to being in at all. Mr. Hyde, in his Dr. Jekyll personality as well, is with Lord Byron, who is, a real life historical figure, but was also was married to Mary Shelley, who wrote the original novel. He was also in the Bride of Frankenstein film. A guy playing Lord Byron, but Byron has literary elements that we like to pull from. But he was involved in Frank's exile to the stars. So Frank has a history with both Hyde and Byron. And during his captivity, not only do he and Larry get experimented on in ways that definitely change their relationship forever, we get to sort of see more flashbacks to see that maybe Frank isn't a complete monster. He's still pretty bad, but we get to see new scenarios that we wouldn't normally see Frank in, that paint him in a bit of a new light and recontextualizes just why he's on this quest for revenge in the first place.
Okay. Now, how far is the progress on chapter 3? Is that done? Is it in process? Where's that as far as things?
Yeah, so the preview pages you see on the Kickstarter are what is done of issue 3. So we have the first, five pages or so, plus the covers. Those are all done. Once funding is done, we're going to get with Ellie. And we're going to get started on pages as soon as possible and get the rest of the other 15 to 35 pages done.
Okay. Any ideas to when chapter 3 you think will be done?
So we do at the bottom of our Kickstarter page have kind of like an estimated timeline. Campaign's ending early October. So we're hoping to get art started as soon as that's done and get the physical rewards sent out probably sometime early next year. Of course, it depends on how fast we can get the art and the colors and the letters done. But we've been working with this team for a good bit. So we have a pretty consistent idea of how long it takes to get a comic book made. So expect issue 3 and 4, 3 and 4 completed by early next year.
Well, what about the script? Have you gotten the script for 3 done?
Oh yeah. Scripts for 3 and 4 are in the bag. Yeah. No, we're just waiting on funding to get the art in.
Okay. All right. Now, chapter 4, of course, let me read that paragraph so I can make sure I don't spoil anything. Chapter 4 is a murder mystery featuring the Invisible Man as an unlikely ally to help Frank and Larry hunt down something that's been framing them for the murder of several children. What they find is unspeakable. So that's got some good stuff. So that comes right after chapter 3, is time-wise?
Yes, all of these issues are sequential. I mean, they have flashbacks peppered throughout, but each issue in and of itself is sequential. Chapter 4 was basically a fill-in issue. I had written 12 issues of Frankenstein, and when we got to the end of those 12 issues, Wells had brought up that early on, we don't seem to get a great chance to explore Frank and Larry as like a duo. We get to see them be in situations together, but we haven't seen them actually work together in any substantial way that, kind of earns what they're doing in the later parts of the story. So Wells is like, why don't we write a quick issue in the middle, in between like 3 and 4, and kind of explore that dynamic and see how it builds. And I was like, okay, that's fine. So I shifted all the issues down one and put a fill-in issue right after 3, and made it a quiet little murder mystery, which is something that Frank is not accustomed to. Frank is very much an action kind of guy. He wants to punch things, but this is a situation that he can't punch his way out of. He has to be subtle. He has to be tactful. And Larry has to help him figure out how to do that so that they can actually solve the problem in front of them. And we also get to introduce the Invisible Man along the way to kind of nudge and help them out. And he's so much fun to write. I love the Invisible Man and like the lore that we created around him. So I'm issue 4 is one of my favorites. And just because it's so off kilter, there's probably about 3 issues in the entire series that are off brand Frankenstein, but they're some of the best because it's Frank in a situation that he's not used to. And it's so much fun.
Now, we talked about Wolfman being something different character, Frankenstein the Bride. But let's go back to Mr. Hyde for a second. Is there something different about him, that a different take that you took on Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde?
That was – it's actually Wells who came up with this direction of Hyde. He – our Hyde is – he's very much a victim. That grotesque Mr. Hyde that you see in the preview pages, like that is Hyde, like that is his normal appearance. And he has to take a serum to actually like turn into Dr. Jekyll so that like he can participate in normal human life and be with Byron, in any sort of intimate way. So he has to basically take medicine for a disability and to try and, you know, be a part of this world that has constantly manipulated and abused and rejected him. And it just so happened that he's kind of put himself in. He's on the wrong side of history, more or less. Like the ones who are pulling his strings were always the bad guys. And now they've crossed paths with Frank once again. And Hyde is going to have to deal with those consequences. But he's very much, he's still a bruiser. He's like the Hulk in that regard. He's one of the few people in this world that can go like toe to toe with Frank physically. And, he's a lot of fun to watch, but his interactions with Byron are the most fun because you get to see this monster who does not want to be a monster trying to like live a life with his partner in a way that makes them both happy. And it just so happens this world is not made for those kind of people.
Because I, you know, you mentioned the Hulk, and the first thing I think of these two things about is that a lot of people make them too close to the Hulk for me. They get angry, and then they change into Hyde, or something happens, or something. I like the fact that he has to take some sort of medication or drug in order to change personas. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. No. That whole Hyde as the Incredible Hulk has been played out since League of Extraordinary Gentlemen did it. So like, we didn't want to just do that again. Like we had to figure out like, okay, who is Hyde and what does he want and how can we make this interesting? And thankfully Wells was at the table for this one and he had a pretty good angle on it.
Great. Great. Now let's move on to the Invisible Man. How does your take from the Invisible Man? What's that all about?
So our Invisible Man is from a race of invisible people. He comes from like the legendary Invisible Village, and they are like, you know, spies, assassins, you know, invisible people. They're great for that. And when we first meet our Invisible Man, I think we called him James from the film. He's a much more lighthearted character, but he's the cynical kind of lighthearted He's not like Larry, who is lighthearted and optimistic. Our invisible man, Jack, that's his name, not James. My bad, guys. Jack is very, he's cynical, but he likes to joke around a lot. He likes to poke the bear when it comes to Frank, and likes to see how far he can kind of take it. So he's a great dynamic to add to the cast for this issue. And we will definitely, pun intended, be seeing more of him throughout the series, but he just kind of comes and goes throughout the pages as we kind of need him. But definitely a breath of fresh air to our dynamic of Frank and Larry.
Okay, you mentioned the whole series, and this is four chapters. Do you have any idea, if you get to do the whole series, how many chapters you'd like to have in this?
We have about 13 planned out right now. We have 13 written, with an ending that could be the ending, could lead to more. We've talked about a sequel series. We've talked about a prequel series. We've talked about spinoffs. Frank is a universe that could be very expansive if we wanted it. And there's definitely a version of Frank that could go on in perpetuity as just like the monster of the week kind of Western that the old Conan the Barbarian comics were. We're not necessarily going to do that, but we kind of want to have a definitive beginning, middle, and end here. But so far we have 13 planned with a potential for a whole lot more if the readership is there, and if our creative energies are there.
Sounds like this could be a whole movie series or a TV show or something to me. This really does speak to that.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. I'm happy with an expansive line of comic books, but if Netflix wants to pay for a Frankenstein the Unconquered series, I'm here for it. Let's go.
Okay. Now, I wanted to talk about a level on the Kickstarter that I don't think I've seen anybody else do before. So I'm kind of intrigued by it. There's a $250 level, and as we're talking, nobody has taken one of them yet. And it's called Adopt a Page. For the cost of producing one page of art for Frankenstein the Unconquered, you can adopt a page of the book. You'll get to read the book before anyone else, select a page to adopt, have your name put on that page, receive a special acknowledgement in the thank you page, and get an 11x17 poster of the page you adopt. You'll also get foil cover copies of issues number 3 and 4. I've never seen that before. I've seen people get drawn into comics. I've never seen anybody adopt the page. How did you guys come up with that idea?
We were just kind of trying to figure out how to give readers a piece of the book. Traditional comics drawn on paper with pens and pencils, and you can get an original piece of like John Romita Jr. art if you wanted to. But not so much in the modern era of making comics, especially in the indie space, where most creators are working digitally. So we kind of wanted to try and figure out, okay, how do we do the original art thing digitally? And this was kind of our solution. So you pay for the page of art, and then you get your name printed like on the page, adopted by so-and-so. So everybody knows that that is your page. And then we ship you the page on like this nice big impressive 11x17. It's the page from the book, so it's not like the original black and whites. It's the finished page that you can kind of frame up and display as your own. And we've had a few people get that throughout our Mechaton campaigns and our previous Frankenstein campaign. They're not necessarily flying off the shelves, but you're paying for a page of art. I wouldn't expect it to, but people are responding to it. And I think that idea of just like having a piece of the book that is yours, like you paid for this page of art, is really special. And I think as a fan, it would be something that I would love to have.
That's a good idea because, as you were saying, people do artwork digitally these days. It used to be you could sell the art when you did it on pencil and paper and stuff like that. You could sell that. But you can't do that anymore because if you just do a printout, you could print 60,000 of them and sell them if you wanted. But there's nothing special about it. But this is an interesting way to make this something unique. So I really like that. Yeah, that's a great one. I hope other people pick that up because I think that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, it's one of a kind. We're never going to print one of those again for somebody else. Like, that is your page, and you can rest assured that it's only going to be your page. So yeah, I hope other campaigns kind of look into it as well. I know there's like draw you in tiers as well, to where you can literally get put in the book. And that's cool for some. We tried to do that on one of our past campaigns, and I think we had somebody respond to it, but it hasn't felt quite as special as the adopted page, at least to me personally.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the title, there was something, a description that I had not understood before. It's the Grantee Award-winning comic returns. I didn't know what a Grantee Award was, so I looked it up, and it has to do, as far as I can tell, it's Grant Stoy. Is he giving out those awards? Is that what's happening?
Yes, Grant Stoy. He put us in his year end best of, and we're very thankful for him for that. So it's very much a little cheeky, like raise your glass to Grant, and it's all one big community in the indie comics space. So it's all a kind of you put in what you get what you put in, and getting to work with a lot of other talented writers and artists and colorists and letterers and all sorts of people is fantastic. So Grant putting us on his year end wrap up was very special. So we kind of wanted to show our appreciation by putting that right in the description there, that we're proud to be grantee recipients.
Now, of course, if you're looking for the book, it's at grantstoy.com. That's GRANTSTOYE.com. And it's under the favorite Kickstarter book section. And it's listed there. So just in case people want to find it, I did a little digging to find it.
There's lots of great books on that best of. You do well to actually like look at that list and check out some of the books he recommends. Dude has discerning taste, as you can tell from Frankenstein the Unconquered.
Is he going to do that every year?
I think he's been doing it. I don't know years in particular, but I don't see him stopping anytime soon.
Okay. Now, of course, this is going to keep you guys busy and stuff like that. And, of course, you have other projects going. Are there other projects you can tell us about that you're working on?
Of course. We're always working on more Frank and more Mechaton. This will be our last Frank for the year, but I believe we're going to be looking into doing more Mechaton at the start of next year. We will hopefully, fingers crossed, get our the first five issues of Mechaton, our all-ages giant robot series, published through Scouts in a collected edition that should hopefully be hitting shelves by the end of the year, but if not, early next year. And then we'll probably be back on Kickstarter for the continuation of that series, issue 6 and 7, or 6, 7, 8. We'll figure out what we're doing there. And we also later this year, 2023, we are going to be re-debuting Depths, our previous Kickstarter. We couldn't quite meet the funding on that one, so we are attempting a Zoop campaign with Depths as well. We've lowered the campaign requirements for it. We have an enthusiastic community behind it from the first time we ran it, so we're optimistic about this new campaign, and Zoop is more comics focused than Kickstarter is anyway. So we're going to have more of a push from them as well. So yeah, we're going to be bringing Depths back. So if that was something you guys out there were interested in and upset that it didn't reach its funding, well, here's another chance to try and make that happen. Just go to pay attention to our newsletter. We'll let you know when it's live, but that should be sometime later this year, probably November, I think, is what we're planning on. So we'll be doing another campaign soon enough.
Because I like Zoob.gg, because you're right, they are comic-centric mostly, and I think that that's a great thing to do with it. Now, you have a website at DaltonKShannon.com, and let's see, it says here you got Twitter and Instagram accounts. You want to tell people how to follow you on there?
If you must, yeah, you can. DaltonKShannon.com is undergoing a bit of a rebuild for next year, so it's you're not going to find a whole lot of update. You're not going to find a whole lot of updates from me anywhere online. I'm not like I have Twitter. I'm Dalton K. Shannon anywhere that matters on social media, but social media is crumbling as we speak, so I've not been posting on anything for quite a few months. The best way to actually find me is to sign up for our newsletter, which you can through my website, or you can on my bio on Twitter. It's the Comics, Cats, and Cocktails newsletter, where once a month we let you in on behind the curtain stuff with what we're working on, books that we're reading, cocktail recipes, cat pictures, all the good stuff that you come to know and love. So that's probably the best way to keep up with what Wells and I are doing is that newsletter in particular, and look forward to the start of next year when my actual website is gonna launch with a new kind of overhaul.
Okay, is you think next year you guys will be getting back to conventions, or still gonna wait a time for that?
No. We have kind of hit the end of the road for conventions for this year, but next year we've already started signing up for conventions next year. So hopefully we'll be making the rounds. Wells is up in Chicago, so I know we'll be doing some up in the Midwest area, and I'm back down in Arkansas, so I'll be doing some of the more southern cons. So be on the lookout for us there. We will we're going to be back on the scene 2024.
That'd be great, because I think conventions are starting to gear up. So I think it's fun to interact with fans at cons and stuff. I think that's a great thing. So.
Yeah, I mean, with social media crumbling around us, like the in-person interactions of conventions are becoming the lifeblood of the indie sphere once again. I love going to conventions. I love talking to people and talking to fans and getting books in hands and meeting new artists that I would never have met otherwise, because I'm not on social media anymore. Like, I don't know what to look for. So getting to talk to booth partners or just new, cool, weird stuff. That's what conventions are for, and I love it.
Yeah, that's how you meet other professionals and stuff like that. Of course, I won't recognize you without the spaghetti strainer on your head. So I'll have to.
That's packed for every trip. You got to be ready for the strainer.
Okay. Anybody who knows, if you see the drawing of Dalton, it has that. That's the drawing. So you got to make sure we do that. Well, Dalton, much success on this. I'm sure this is going to be a big success, like all the others are. And I think we'll get to see many more chapters in Frankenstein the Unconquered and your other good things with Wells in the future. So all I can say is keep up the wonderful stuff and much success.
Well, hey, thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.